This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're tuned into Bar None. My name's Daryl Ong, and this is the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. A bumper episode this week. Coming up, we hear from the president of the Badminton Association of Malaysia, Dato' Sri Noza Zakaria, as we reflect on Malaysia's recent disappointing outing at the Thomas and Uber Cup in Bangkok.
Chong Wei is a legend. Chong Wei is our greatest player. To get another Chong Wei is not easy. But to be able to have a system that produce world-class players, that one I can promise to the public.
But first up, we spend some time with Rachel Arnold, national squash player, 2015 SEA Games gold medalist for both the team and singles events. She joins us as she tells us about her meteoric rise to prominence and also about the perils of stepping into the footsteps of her older sister, former squash queen Delia Arnold.
You started young, way before 15, right? Has the years gone by quickly for you?
Very quick. Yeah, I felt like it was 2014 a few months ago.
Right.
So yeah, it's gone by quickly.
Mm. And in terms of squash, is it squash day in, day out for you since when you were...
Yeah, pretty much. I've been training since I was young. 2 sessions a day mostly, so... Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk more about the sessions later, but not a lot of 20-year-olds are as hardworking as you and dedicated to a particular mission like yourself. Looking around at your peers, I'm sure your friends who are not sports people, yeah, but your age, do you feel that you missed out on something?
I feel like I missed out on a lot, like birthdays, celebrations and stuff, but I think it'll all be worth it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But in terms of, say, growing up experiences, like you're not studying at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Do you miss studying?
I feel like I missed out on like the college stuff, you know, they go through studying and going out maybe. Yeah, I feel like I missed out on some kind of fun.
Hey, but you're flying all over the world.
Yeah, so.
I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Rachel, you came from a very supportive family and actually a squash family. Your dad coached you and your sister. Your brother's also a squash player. Apart from squash, was it always squash from day one? Were there any other sports that you guys were into?
Not really, because our dad was a squash coach. But yeah, we pretty much just played squash our whole lives. Never tried anything else.
How about you personally? Like, have you wanted to try something out?
Not really, to be honest. I don't know.
So squash.
I still like racket sports like tennis or badminton, but never really pursued it.
Do you play? Like
socially, yeah.
Socially.
For fun, yeah.
Do you feel that the training, and not training, but the exercise you get from badminton and tennis helps you, you know, in terms of swinging technique or that sort of thing?
Not really. I think they're both very different compared to squash. I think it's not really helpful.
Just play for fun, lah.
Yeah.
You came from a squash family. Would you say that you have an advantage over other aspiring squash players?
I feel like I get a lot of support from my family and everyone else from MSN. But I think it just depends on yourself and how hard you push yourself.
Taking us back to the start, your sister is much older than you, and I'm sure she was already playing when you were growing up. But do you remember how did you get into squash?
My dad always told me that he would bring me to the courts when I was young for his coaching sessions, and I would just be running around in the court. That's how.
You're supposed to observe, right?
Yeah, observe, but I know I was just having fun running around. Yeah.
Do you remember your first ever match? Must be quite some time ago.
No, I don't remember. Yeah, I was really young.
How about the moment where, you know, 2014 was actually your first international outing in Glasgow for the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah.
But before that, do you remember when it got really official, squash got serious for you?
I think maybe it was 2012 or 2013. I was playing in this tournament and I was like upsetting ranked players, really high ranked. And I think that was the main point for me.
Right.
Turning point.
How did that make you feel? I mean, like you're beating all these already established players, right?
Yeah, I was surprised and I didn't really expect it. I didn't win the tournament, but I made it to the finals. And I was just really impressed with myself. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
And I'm sure, you know, the rest of people were impressed with you as well.
Yeah,
so impressed with you that 2014 Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. Tell us a bit about experiences playing in international tournament, you know, coming from small national tournaments in Malaysia.
It was a really good experience for me. And it was a Commonwealth Games. First games, I think, for me. And I think I gained a lot from it, from 2014. Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about the lessons you learned?
We didn't really, because I was playing only the doubles, And we didn't really focus on that as much as we are now. So I think we just went there and learned and gained a bit first, yeah.
And I'm sure that lessons helped, right? Because a year later, the 2015 SEA Games, you won gold medal.
Yeah,
that's really happy. For both singles and doubles.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Tell us a bit about winning that.
Actually, we won in the team and singles. So there was no doubles at that point. But yeah, I was really happy with how I performed, how our team performed. And it was a good win for me, yeah.
Great. News has been all around. You have big shoes to fill. Your sister Delia was established and proper, rising up the ranks, squash player. Is that an expectation you set for yourself, or is it other people giving you that kind of goal?
I think it's coming more from me, but also from other people.
So you put it on yourself, okay.
Yeah, I try to put it on myself a bit more, but I think that pushes me a bit harder every day to try and beat her.
but do you like that comparison though? Are you okay with that comparison?
Sometimes I guess I don't mind it, but I would want to be on my own, you know, name, my own name.
Yeah. Great. And you really are, I would say.
Yeah,
you had some setbacks last year in 2017. Yeah. Did perform, you lost your SEA Games gold medal and also finished runner-up twice in the Malaysian squash tour. How has these setbacks helped you for this year?
It really helped me. In terms of, I was really down, I was not feeling it last year, but I really pushed myself hard during training and even during the hard days where I'm not doing well, that's the days where I really need to push. So I think that helps a lot.
Is it a case of last year the opponents getting better, or maybe you just dip in form a little bit?
I think it's a bit of both.
Both.
Yeah, for sure.
Talking a bit about the things you changed for your game this year, is there a specific kind of thing in your game that you changed for this year from last year?
Not really. I think it's almost the same. Trying to improve my fitness for now, and also maybe the intensity, trying to bring it up a little bit.
Okay. Tell us a bit about your training regime. You just said fitness right there. Bring us through your day-to-day of your training.
So it's like 2 sessions a day for 6 days a week. And sometimes it's either running gym once a day and then a squash session. And then that's about it throughout the whole week.
Throughout the whole week, and 6 days a week.
Yeah.
How long a session?
One session, if it's a squash session, it's about an hour and a half at least. Mm. And then gym or running will be about an hour.
Recently, the Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast just ended and the campaign didn't end well for the squash team. But that being said, what are some of the lessons that you learned from the recent Commonwealth Games?
I feel that we should not be afraid of our opponents. Like, even though they're ranked number one or number two in the world, I think if we believe in ourselves a bit more, we can definitely do it.
Yeah, and you guys did it, right? Yeah. I mean, you guys beat the world champions from New Zealand.
We started off really well, but didn't really end as well, as good as we thought we wanted to.
Talk to me a bit about the first match at Gold Coast.
Okay, so we were really nervous playing the world champs, world number one. But I think we really pushed them in terms of the match. And we won, we got the win.
I'm sure you guys were kind of intimidated, right, in the beginning?
Yeah, for sure. But I think we didn't really focus on that a bit much and just played our game.
Mm. Yeah. And you guys won. Tell us a bit about some of your rivals from the Commonwealth Games.
I think almost everyone was our rival during that time. Everyone is a really good player and we had to play our best in any match.
How about a rival for Rachel Arnold? You know, who is your nemesis right there in the squash world? Don't say your sister.
Was my sister. I think everyone, the up and coming, especially the younger girls, I feel like everyone's my rival.
I mean, you started from a young age as well.
Yeah.
And do you feel a threat now coming from the younger girls?
A bit, slightly, yeah. But I'm ready for whatever they've got.
All right. Talking a bit about age, you're 22 years old. Last year, you had a match against Rachel Greenham, who is 20 years older. You lost the match, but I just want to know your opinion in terms of age or experience. You know, which you think has served the best quality in squash?
I think experience for me. Like you said, Rachel Greenham, 20 years older, and she's got a lot of experience in her. And she just uses that in a game. Mm. And she still plays well.
So for you, it's kind of a threat from both up and down. Like, you're scared of the younger girls as well as the experienced players.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. In your opinion, what kind of qualities separates a good squash player from a great one?
I think your attitude towards training or towards your match, like how you approach it. I feel like if you don't put 100% on it, you won't do as well.
You played in both team and singles events. You were quoted as saying that you like to play team and doubles events more than singles.
Yeah.
Why is that so?
I feel doubles is a bit more fun and not all more on fun. Yourself. Yeah.
How is it more fun?
Because there's your partner and you, so if you work well together and you're just having fun in the court.
But you have to share the glory.
That's true. But I don't mind sharing, so it's all good.
Tell us a bit about your coaches. Does your dad still, you know, guide you through your game?
Does a little bit time to time, but not as much as he used to.
Mm. Yeah. Tell us a bit about your national coaches and, you know, what they bring to your game.
My coach, Peter Geneva, right now, he coaches me every day, so he really pushes me during training and off training as well.
Is it a military-style kind of training?
not so intense, no, but it really helps me. I need the extra push. Nice.
Great stuff. You're currently ranked 51 in the world. You've been rising up ever since you started. What's your target for 2018?
Hopefully by the end of this year, top 30.
Top 30?
Yeah.
All right, so kind of 21 places.
Yeah, it's a lot.
To catch up. Yeah. What do you think you have to do for this year to go the extra mile to get that?
I feel like I'm so close to getting there, but it still takes a lot of time and effort.
What do you think is stopping you from getting there?
I think sometimes just the mentality for me in that part and that I need to work on during my match.
Are you the type to, you know, not to say anything, but is it feeling under pressure type of thing during a match?
Sometimes, but sometimes I feel like I give up on myself during the match.
Oh, really?
Like a few seconds that I just like feel like my mental is just out. Mm. Like, I don't know.
Because there is an added pressure, especially on the squash court, right? You guys are in like a aquarium-like thing. Everyone's
like
looking at you, right?
Yeah.
So that's that whole kind of like pressure when all eyes are on you.
Mm.
Do you think that you could improve more on your in-game performance or more on like the strategy and pre-planning beforehand?
Yeah, I think I really need to work on my strategy and like my tactics before my match and prepare well the day before. Mm. I don't really do that.
Don't you have like a team, you know, studying the opponents
for
you?
Yeah, we do actually. But I still need to do it myself sometimes. Mm.
Because it's interesting when you look at your opponents and you go into each game different, right? Do you go into each game playing the same game that you play or you tinker with it a bit for the opponent?
I think for me, it's mostly almost the same game. But sometimes you still need to change your strategies for different opponents.
Mm.
Yeah.
What kind of player would you describe yourself as?
Very attacking player.
Attacking.
Yeah, very attacking. Yeah.
So your partner has to be the one that's doing all the defending?
Yeah, defend. Yeah, pretty much.
You're one of the icons in the squash world in Malaysia, and we are a squash country. We're proud to say we're a squash country. We're proud to say we excel at it. What do you hope for the future of squash in Malaysia?
I hope that more people start playing squash a bit more, enjoy it, and for the kids to play and have fun.
What do you think the country can do to help elevate the culture of squash?
I think maybe have more events for squash and just like fun games and stuff so that they enjoy it and start playing a bit more.
In your opinion, is there enough infrastructure, enough facilities to cater to?
I feel that, there are a lot of squash courts around and it's really good for everyone. It's quite convenient.
Mm.
There's one in Bukit Jalil, one in Jalan Duta, and a lot more in schools also.
Mm.
So I think that helps.
Yeah, I think squash is in a very privileged position in Malaysia. Lots of sports don't have the facilities or, you know, readily available yet. What does 2018 hold for Richard Arnold? What are the upcoming games and how are you preparing for it?
First of all, we've got nationals in July, I think. And then after that, there's Asian Games. So hopefully I'll make it for that one.
Last question, Rachel. As a young role model, especially in the squash world, do you have any words of advice for aspiring young squash players?
Just to believe in yourself and train hard and work for it. If you really want it, you will get it.
That was Rachel Arnold, national squash player and one of the shining lights in the future of Malaysian sport. Coming up, we're privileged to have in our studios Dato' Sri Noza Zakaria, the president of the Badminton Association of Malaysia, to reflect on our Thomas and Uber Cup outings. Stay tuned, my name's Darryl Ong, and this is Panan right here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you tune in to Panan. My name's Darryl Ong, and this is a show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Off the back of a disappointing campaign for the Malaysian badminton team in Bangkok, where the squad failed to advance beyond the quarterfinals in the Thomas Cup, While the women's team did not even make it to the top 8 in the Uber Cup, this week on the show, we have Badminton Association of Malaysia's president, Datuk Sri Noza Zakaria, to reflect on the underwhelming outing. Despite a string of qualified coaches, modern state-of-the-art facility and assistance from sports science experts, it seems that our national shuttlers are still struggling on the international stage. Clearing the air and paving the way for the future, Harish Deo is with Datuk Sri Noza Zakaria, starting with his thoughts on the performance in Bangkok.
Our Thomas Cup team was ranked 7, seeded 7, and our Uber Cup ranked 9. So we know it's going to be a very tough tournament for us. But I will say, we had a very close one with a little bit of luck. Our quarter-final path for Thomas Cup would have been quite different. Yeah? Going into the tournament, I actually, when I set a target, it was putting a higher expectation. And I wish that my team, for instance, Thomas Cup team, would be able to do the same like what they did in India, New Delhi 2014, and also in Kunshan in 2016. Mm. But I also believe that it is a team of the future. If you see at our Thomas Cup team, it is the combination between the senior and the junior. You see, the seniors were Datuk Lee Chong Wei, Govisham Wisham, Wisham Wee Kiong, and also we have the future players, the investment of the future, Lee Zi Jia, Leong Jun Hao, Aaron So, and these are the players that we are basically exposing them to the tournament at the highest level. So. We were almost there, you know, against Denmark. You can see Lee Zi Jia played very well, yeah, by contributing a very valuable point. And the young pair of Aaron and Teo Yi Yi did very well against Bo and Christensen. It showed to us our trust in the young players was not entirely misplaced. With the loss against Denmark, we were pitted. Then against seeded number 3, that is Indonesia. Yeah. While during the game, you know, while Datuk Lee Chong Wei, as always, the reliable and dependable one, he gives an excellent start against Anthony Ginting. It was disappointing that Wisham and Wee Kiong could not find their rhythm to deliver a point for us. That's basically, you know, the story with Thomas Cup. And with Uber Cup, I know a lot of people say we failed to meet our target mm-hmm. for quarterfinal. But I personally think that there was a significant improvement from our women's single, yeah, with Sonia as the lead singles and Jingwei showing character to bounce back from defeat with victories against China and France, while Kisona and Yingying also perform considerably well. There are signs of development and we now need to demand for more consistency from the players. However, the women's doubles were a disappointment. I mean, to be fair to Rosman, who is the head coach for women's double, he has to settle with scratch pairs because Kewe, who is a partner of Vivian, mm-hmm. had an injury prior to the tournament.
Okay, you spoke a lot about the younger players,
yes.
youngsters. Now, yeah. Leong Jun Hao is 19, Lee Ji Jia is 20. Mm-hmm. But what is BM's definition of young? Because if we look at mm-hmm. the Danish star, Victor Axelsen, he mm-hmm. is already at number one at the age of 24. Mm-hmm.
Aris, we are aware that players like Axelsen and Momota, for instance, Momota from Japan, they are in their early 20s. Mm. And if you look at their current form, they will definitely be the players to beat for many years to come. However, I also believe that Jun Hao, Zi Jia still have a couple more years, if not sooner, to fulfill their potential. Therefore, I am willing to invest on this player to fast track their you know their progress to the highest level. And if you look since they were trained under Miss Bone, Datuk Miss Bone, you can see not only Li Zijia and Jun Hao, we can see that there are more players like Cham Jun Wei and Tan Jiawei coming to the front and will be able to become the so-called second liners.
You spoke about Miss Boon.
Yeah.
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 And being the head coach, he had days before the tournament said that he will be held accountable if the team failed to make the target. Would you now hold him to his words?
I would think that the way that I look at things is that it is a collective responsibilities. Yeah. Right from president, council members, and also coaches and players. Mm-hmm. We have to take it as a collective responsibilities. I know the expectation. You know, there's a gap between what the public wants vis-a-vis with our the reality on the ground. Mm-hmm. That is why we're trying to impress on the public that we have a team for semi-final and quarter-final. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, when the reality sinks, we see that we are far behind in terms of achieving the dream. Mm-hmm. Why I say that? You know, the last time we won Thomas Cup was in 1992. Mm-hmm. That was 26 years ago. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, it was 1967. It's 25 years ago. And that was, I think, before 1967, it was the early years of badminton, yeah? We are talking about 1949, 1952, 1955. This living in the nostalgic glory days of Malaysian badminton a long time ago, of course, it brings that this the high expectation that maybe one day we will want to. We definitely have to bring back Thomas Cup. But as I said, I think Malaysian badminton, for instance, the last 10 years was actually very much relating to one individual called Dato' Lee Chong Wei. Yeah. So when I took over, and I think, you know, you got to be institutionally driven rather than individual-centric. So you got to build a system where the processes and the system will, at the end of the day, will produce quality players at the highest level, not only one or two. So that's why I say I take it as a collective responsibilities. I see Ms. Boon has brought some improvement in our singles department. Of course, as a president of Badminton Association of Malaysia, number one sport, sports are very close to everyone's heart. Mm-hmm. The question always being asked is that who is in the next Chong Wei? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as I said, I will start a system and the processes. I will get world-class coaches to ensure that there are many players that will achieve top 10 in the world. Chong Wei is a legend. Chong Wei is our greatest player. To get another Chong Wei is not easy. But to be able to have a system that produces world-class players, that one I can promise to the public.
Going back to what you said about collective responsibility, now, I would like to just point out what the Star Sports editor Rajesh Paul had said in her commentary on May 29. She asked, what about the 20 over council members who showed up in Bangkok? How much are their contributions towards creating this oneness and high level of motivation in the team? Why did we have 20 council members there who paid for the trip, who paid for the accommodation?
Council consists of president and the secretaries of the state, yeah. We have 15, yeah. So times 2 is around 30. Mm. Yes, there were around 20 of them in Bangkok. You know, as a policy makers at the council, we have agreed for this council member to be in Bangkok on a few bases or reasons. One is that for them to basically, of course, cheer for our players, give them exposure. Running, for instance, a running of a level one competition, you know, like Thomas Cup and Uber Cup, and because you know, for there also this responsibility taken by BAM of organizing tournaments on behalf of BWF at the Super Series or even at the IC and IS level. So we need to expose the council member, and I think going just to Bangkok is the best opportunity, rather than you have to go to Switzerland or somewhere else. So it's I think it is a productive session for them. I think they learn a lot from this trip. And we can go back, and even the council member, I told them to do some soul searching in terms of looking at where we are as a badminton nation and how do we basically chart a new direction after this Thomas and Uber Cup in Bangkok.
You are also the Olympic Council of Malaysia president. You see sports generally as well, not just badminton, but also overall. Yeah. And you would have to agree with me that we have many, many officials at every level, whether it's at the state, district, or even national level. But I would like to say that they have failed to justify their contribution to sports. I mean, some associations have 20, 30 officials, yet they struggle to raise funds, they struggle to market themselves.
Yeah, I think if you talk about this, the essential part is having a good governance. Good governance, it means that do we move from the traditional system of having council and big committees? Do you have a lean structure where there's a clear division between committee members and management, professional management? I, for one, in BAM, have that very clear delineation between a policymaker and a professional management. Since I came in, I brought in Michelle Chai, our GM. She has a vast experience in sports. She was in UAE for UAE football. She was from AFC. And she comes back to basically do the national service. I also have created a CFO post, Chief Financial Officer, to basically look at the running of the finance of the association, and also packaging, sponsorship and marketing. So if you look at this, I mean, council is council. I mean, you cannot deny council is not a board like a corporate board. Council consists of individuals who are very passionate about the sports. Maybe they are ex-legend, you know. They actually wants to contribute. But bottom line is that we must now bring more professionalism into sports. By, as I said, by clear delineation between council and committee against having a professional management.
Well said, because professionalism is pretty much dead at the lower levels. Going back to the unconvincing performance in Bangkok, we also saw a similar forgettable outing at the Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast. Now, for BAM, you've got two major tournaments ahead of you, the World Championships in July and the Asian Games in August. Would you like to tell the fans to lower their expectations?
It's not about lowering expectation. Of course, we want to, we want to achieve, the best. I, for one, since I took over, every time I went to a tournament, I have this emotionally roller coaster experience. Yeah, right from my Sudirman Cup in Gold Coast, then Commonwealth game when we lost to India, and actually our sure bet, and then when our sure bet like Govisham Wikyong lost in semi-final. At the end of Commonwealth game, there was only two events, and both two events are badminton. We were fortunate to get two gold medals from that. And after that, in between, there was Thomas Cup qualification in Alostar, where we lost to Thailand first match, and Thomas Cup in Bangkok. So it's about managing expectation. Everyone wants a target. Everyone's wants a set of KPIs. But we got to go back to the reality on the ground. For instance, badminton. Badminton is no longer like badminton that we used to see 10, 20 years ago. Now there's an emergence of non-traditional country, like Hong Kong, Chinese Taipei, and now Japan, for instance. Japan is even better than China now. But do we, at the end of the day, lower expectation and say accept the fate and destiny? Of course, it's a very difficult period for me, especially I am the president post-Olympic. You see all my Olympians after Olympic Rio, they went, they have declined in performance. But that's a natural thing to happen to athletes. So again, as I said, we will do our best to prepare the country with the new set of players, new crops of players. We will put up a system. We have to engage more stakeholders. For instance, development at the grassroots. is only related to traditional states like Kuala Lumpur, Selangor, Penang, and Johor. What about the rest, you know? So I guess we need to continue this work, and we must have a proper blueprint going forward. And as far as expectation, as I said, there's a gap, serious gap between what people expect. I mean, not everyone is Chong Wei. Everyone wants a Chong Wei. Even China wants Chong Wei. Even other countries want Chong Wei, yeah? But we will have to be realistic in our approach. We will have to have a proper blueprint, a systematic one moving forward. And we need to have more stakeholders involved. Let it be clubs, let it be states, you know, and everyone.
Is it time for BAM to embrace clubs? I remember about 5-10 years ago, BAM looked at clubs as though they were competition. Do you know, is it high time for us to embrace clubs?
It's also about the structure that we have. We are not like Indonesia, we are not like Japan, that basically thrives through these clubs. Clubs are, for them, clubs are very big and they have very good sponsors. But we traditionally, Malaysia way of doing things are through its athletes and all are through states. Okay, now we can see that there are clubs created, you know, but I think they are not reached a level where they will be able to have a system or a facilities that is equivalent to BAM, for instance. However, I've started to engage the clubs. For instance, we are in the midst of finalizing the acquisition of Purple League, for instance. Yeah, so for us to one day emulate football, hockey, for instance, to have Super League, Premier League, you know, to create more professionalism in terms of the setting up the clubs, in terms of managing the finance and the sponsorship. And finally, the states will be able also to create clubs to represent them so that through a privatization system. So these are things that will take time. We are moving towards that direction. And as I said, in order to increase the talent pool, we got to get more stakeholders in. As it is now, we are relying purely on BAM on a centralized basis. And at the state level, there's, as I said again, there are only few traditional states that have been producing players at the development level. And now we should bring other stakeholders like clubs to be together in the mainstream of the development of players in Malaysian badminton.
I would like to just go back to what Badminton Asia Chief Operating Officer Kenny Goh, he told the news website 2213 recently that BAM should concentrate on organising tournaments and let the clubs and state BA run development programmes. You said earlier that BAM is too focused on developing players. What are your thoughts about what Kenny said?
I do agree with Kenny's statement. You know, our state BAs currently are running a number of development programs which BAM is subsidizing either by way of assisting in the hiring of coaches or provision of equipment such as shuttlecocks. We are also subsidizing state BAs to encourage them to organize at least two junior program tournaments a year, you know. As for the clubs, we have never stopped clubs from running development programs on or their training centers. In fact, we strongly encourage this. Clubs will continue to be important feeders for BAM. You know, now when I came in as a president on 29 April last year, I also have mentioned about setting up academies by zone. Yeah. At the moment, we have the state-of-the-art academy in Bukit Kiara that will house 200 players. I actually trying, with this academy, trying to revolutionize Malaysian badminton in the sense that, you know, currently we have a junior at Bukit Jalil, part of the sports school system. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take them out and put them in our academy so where they will stay together with the backup and the elite squad. Okay. They will stay together 24 hours. Mm-hmm. It means that they will sleep, they will live, they will drink, they do everything about badminton.
Okay.
And what I'll do is, I'm negotiating with Ministry of Education now to do like a home tutoring, private in terms of bringing teachers according to our flexible timetable. So it means that from two shift of badminton training now, we can increase it to three shift. and everyone will be stayed together, and therefore there will be no differentiation in terms of treatment. Mm-hmm. It means that if now the student do not have access to sports science, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, biomechanics, psychologists, you know, nutrition, mm-hmm. Nutritionists, and mm-hmm. all those things, mm-hmm. they will have everything now mm-hmm. From the age of 13 to 18. Okay. Yeah. So then it means that the whole pipeline, we're gonna have the same exposure, mm-hmm. and I would want after that to put KPI based on performance rather than whether he's a senior or whether he's a junior, you know.
Okay.
And I think with this re-engineering or the revolutionizing the way that we do things, we will be able to quantum leap ourselves in terms of progressing our future badminton players.
Moving forward, where do you see Malaysian badminton in the next 5 years?
I will see that there's a bright light at the end of the tunnel, you know, because I believe with the system that I'm putting forward, you know, I know there are a lot of people will think that, you know, it's a far-fetched thing, but I will try my very best to go for our first, the elusive Olympic gold medal in 2020. As a president of Olympic Council and also as a president of BM, we have the goal congruence of getting badminton to be part of that journey towards Tokyo.
That was Harish Deo speaking to Dato' Sri Noza Zakaria, president of the Badminton Association of Malaysia, as he gives his thoughts on the Thomas and Uber Cup campaign in Bangkok. And with that, we've come to the end of this week's show. If you'd like to check out the interviews again, do head over to our website www.bfm.my/Barnan. If you'd like to get in touch with us, do tweet us. We are at BFM Radio. My name's Daryl Ong. Thanks for listening. And do join us again next week, right here, same time, on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.